Thanks, Randy. For the last couple of days, of course, right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we've been talking about The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe in anticipation of the premier movie event, certainly of this season. And in that regard, as has well been said, familiarity often breeds contempt. Sometimes children growing up in Christian homes who repeatedly hear the basic teachings of the Christian message become desensitized and thus unable to experience the emotional impact in all of its fullness, the joy, the amazement of the gospel that we celebrate with heightened sense during the Christmas season. C.S. Lewis thought that perhaps the story of his imaginary world of Narnia could soften hardened hearts and thus bring children and even adults like myself to feel and to experience again, or perhaps for the first time, the joy, the amazement that comes when we apprehend truth and the nature of ultimate reality. In that way, I think that the fairy tale, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, occasions for so many of us, children and adults alike, just that. Moments of recognition and wonder about ultimate truth and meaning. The story occasions in us moments of awakening in which we experience the profound love that stands behind and informs the very world in which we live. I know this past Saturday when I saw the movie, it did just that for me. That occasion of awakening and recognition is what good fantasy can and often does accomplish. Not only so, but language in general is rife with metaphor and symbolism. We communicate truth and what we think is real through language that is itself fictional. We say can of worms, or frog in my throat, or bout of depression. And certainly all fiction, by its very nature, is make-believe. But make-believe that communicates the author's worldview and truths about real life through the make-believe story. Fantasy, all the more then, does not take place in the real world. It takes place in Narnia or Middle-earth, which are clearly made-up worlds. But fantasy can provide a way to think about that which is real. You see, stories have long played a very significant role in moral education and character formation. Think about the traditional fairy tales. Think about the tortoise and the hare and what that teaches us about perseverance. However, just as stories can influence for the good and can nourish our imagination, they can also corrupt and influence us for evil. Of course, I guess the point then is we need to be able to tell the difference between good fantasy and bad fantasy. And we have an article here at the Christian Research Institute that can help you do just that. It's entitled Good Fantasy and Bad Fantasy by a guest I've had on the show, Dr. Gene Edward Veith. And it sets forth the basic principles of discerning between good and bad fantasy literature. The article is available also on the web at www.equip.org. But you need to be able to discern the worldview behind the fantasy. You need to know how fantasy works. And you also need to understand the power of the story and what effects the fantasy has on readers. For example, if the fantasy occasions in you a feeling or a desire for that which is good or noble or that which is heroic or truly worthy of praise, that's consistent, obviously, with a biblical worldview. And, of course, then you can call it good fantasy. Or if the fantasy inculcates in you an appreciation or longing for the unseen, genuine spiritual realities, and if it helps clarify for us the distinction between that which is real and that which is not real, then it's edifying. If it clarifies for you the distinctions between good and evil, between what is truly beautiful and what is truly ugly, again, it is worthwhile. In sum, if the fantasy works in us the desire to emulate the good and to shun evil, then the fantasy is truly a blessing. When it doesn't, then you have the kind of fantasy that helps you root for evil. And then, of course, you know intuitively it must be wrong. By those standards, I would say the Chronicles of Narnia are superlative fantasy stories. The White Witch, for example, is quite obviously a repugnant villain. She's a symbol for the devil and all of his evil ways. You find the same kind of thing in the Apostle John on the Isle of Patmos. Interesting that you find fantasy imagery in the Bible, but that's where you find it. He uses the imagery, for example, of a mythological dragon in order to portray the dastardly deeds of the devil. Through imaginative wrestling with the evil portrayed either in Revelation or in The Witch in Narnia, you have teachings that the reader gleans with respect to moral virtue and moral character. C.S. Lewis didn't want there to be more Christian stories. He wanted well-grounded, thinking Christians to write good stories, knowing that their Christian worldview would permeate and inform their writings. Well, I don't often jump on passing bandwagons. In the case of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, however, I say, all aboard.